Welcome to TLDR with Tony and Luke. I'm Luke.
And I'm Tony.
Join us for at least half of this episode is going to be member berries.
Member berries.
Do you remember BBS, Tony?
No, I don't.
You don't remember BBS? That's interesting. No. So what, when you weren't like on the net, like pre-internet sort of stuff? You weren't on with computers and doing stuff?
No.
No? You were post-internet?
I was outside playing in the sun or plugging my data set in to play Archon.
Data set?
Yeah, tape, like, cassette. And the game was on a cassette.
But no online stuff. So tape era, but no online stuff. Okay, yeah. interesting. Well, let's go to the other member berries, and that's Baldur's Gate 3, because I think that thing is heavily trading on member berries.
Yes, it is. Thing.
We continue to wonder why people rated this so highly, and I've got to put down there's a huge gap that we're missing between
the single player
and the multiplayer experience, and the gap there is that what people get really riled up about. Because when we sat down to do today's episode and we're working out what we're going to talk about, and I'm like, oh yeah, Baldur's Gate 3, all right, where were we up to again? I really have no, for this whole area of the Shadowlands, I feel like I can't remember what we did last time versus this time, what we talked about already and stuff. It's all
samey.
I really, really do not like
this area.
This whole zone has been not very good, not very interesting, and just overly tedious and slow to play through as multiplayer.
Yeah.
It's really bad. Yeah. Just the having to always be
In around the lamp
at all times. Even when you're inside, you know, you still got to be around. So when we finished off, we just botched a puzzle that we didn't know was a puzzle.
Yes. Yep.
You know?
And so, in single player game, if you've got Shadowheart with you, she automatically passes all the checks because she's a priestess of Shah. So she automatically passes the entire puzzle, bypasses it completely, and her secret door opens.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. So we didn't even know it was a puzzle that we were doing.
Yeah,
but if she's there, she just, and does everything. Bing, 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 bing. Does all the statues and the secret door opens.
I do respect that they've like coded something in for that, because she should know.
She should know
hang on, this is a Shah temple. I know exactly what's going on here, kind of thing.
Yes.
And that kind of makes me feel a little bit more forgiving about, I don't know.
No, I don't.
I don't like that just clicking on an interaction once.
Yeah. Can lock you out of something. Yeah,
I really feel like that icon could have been, and this happens throughout the game, like the icon could be like a difference between like clicking on a broken vase and having a go, that vase is broken.
Yeah.
Should be different to when it's going to kick off something more serious.
Yeah.
Like
it
should have a different, I think that would make the game icon so much more interesting where you could stop and consider.
For multiplayer, 100%.
Yeah.
Because then you consider, okay, which players are best played to interact with this thing.
Let's have a think about, this is a puzzle we need to like, you know, consider what the puzzle, and actually get to like have fun trying to solve the puzzle rather than failing it before we know it's a puzzle.
Well, and it did say Shah is going to test your wisdom or whatever. Are you sure you wish to proceed? So it did say that.
Yeah, right.
But of course, Josh has been click, 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 and went straight past it. And the worst possible character to do the wisdom test.
Yeah.
So, and again, that's a problem with being a multiplayer. Not everybody's on the same page at the
same time. Or reading at the same amount of time, you know, kind of thing. Yeah, that's,
So that was a little bit our own fault.
But look,
also a little bit the game's
fault as well.
The game's fault.
Yeah, it's hard to, it's just not the first time that's happened. It's happened
before. No, it's happened. It would be much better if there was a different icon, different color. Like when you steal stuff, it goes red.
Yes.
So the puzzle stuff could go blue. This is going to be a puzzle. It's puzzle blue. Thing, I'm going to warn you that this is going to be a puzzle.
I know it's a bit. Well, the stealing thing is already immersion breaking because some stuff's stealable and some stuff isn't.
And it's all completely retarded. There can be nobody in the area and you steal stuff.
And they
go, oh, hang on, you got stolen stuff. I found out how you fix that.
Yeah.
So when you steal something,
I
had to read this online because I could not work it out myself. When you steal something, you immediately send it to the camp. And then when they come to rescue, you say, search my pockets, see if you can find it. And they can't find it, and then they stop being suspicious. That is the only way to effectively steal stuff, apparently.
That's so...
Apparently, according to the internet.
Yeah. I mean, like...
Because Josh has stolen stuff, and there's been no one around.
Yeah.
And like 7 minutes later, some guards come and said, oh, you've stolen something. Yeah. How did he know?
He wasn't there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why do they even put that in the game?
Yeah, it just becomes pointless, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And if that's the way to work around it, then I can definitely have a blue outline for puzzle or deeper interaction stuff rather than just flavor text interaction stuff.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah, for sure. Anyway, so we left there with our great disappointment and traveled further north
We stayed within that graveyard or whatever it is. I don't even know what it is that we're in.
I'm just the Shadow
Coast. There's tombstones everywhere, so I'm guessing it's a giant graveyard we're in.
It does seem that way, doesn't it?
And we found a mausoleum of some sort.
Yeah, and there was a guy in there doing something.
With too many elbows.
Yeah, way too many elbows. Yeah. That was weird. He was all put together with random pieces.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was part of a quest. We had to take him out, which we did.
Yeah.
And we also roasted
the dude on the operating table, which didn't even occur to me that I was going to roast him with my lightning bolt. Well, I thought
he was already dead. He didn't look particularly in a great shape. I don't know that we did the wrong thing by just putting him out of misery. No. Whatever was going on there wasn't good for anyone. It wasn't
good for anyone.
No, the guy had too many elbows and it was weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. Took him out. That was an interesting fight.
It was because he'd bring his nurses back to life and then steal their health or something like that. Some weird interaction going on with the dead nurses that you would dump them off and then they'd be back alive again.
Yeah. And he hit really hard as well. So that was keeping Dino on his toes to keep me alive.
Yes.
For that.
And got annoyed about the blood of Lathanda being debuffed, but turns out it wasn't. That we actually got a different buff as well as the blood of Lathanda for solving the puzzle that was giving everybody plus 1d4 radiant damage, which is absolutely brilliant for this area because everything's undead.
Yeah, but it was only a temporary buff, I guess. It was only a
temporary buff until the next long rest. Yeah, but because I didn't realize what it was that gave it to us, I had assumed it was the blood of Lathanda.
The combat log is pointless. The amount of times I've gone to the combat log to try to work out what's going on, it's not. No,
it's rubbish.
The combat logs can go either like too much information or not enough. And this one's definitely not enough. I feel it needs a little bit more in there so you can understand.
But the Blood of Thunder is still a pretty good weapon.
That thing's still
is pretty cool.
Yeah, for sure. No, it's still a great weapon and stuff. No, that's fine. And then we took them out. And then we try to loot, but you can't.
Because you can't really loot because you've got to be in the shade of the lantern.
And so we just abandon that and presume that at some point in the future we'll get an ability that lets us walk through the shadow.
Yeah,
we
either
heal the Shadow Curse lands or we get more
something
lamps, you know.
And then we'll go back and loot.
Yeah.
If we could even be bothered because the loot's rubbish.
Well, I mean, we found a couple of good bits, but when you look on the percentages.
More stuff that we've got than we like we've bought from shops.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I guess you do sell all that stuff you pick up, you know.
To buy the good stuff from the shops.
I don't know. I just let Josh do it all now because he's decided, because he's done it so much, he's decided now what's good and what's bad and what's worth going to. So I just
let him do it.
Yeah, just easier. Which causes frustration because he's always trying to loot everything. We're like, come on, move on. He's like, no, I've got to loot everything. You're like, okay, that is your job. Fair enough. We'll wait. That's fine.
That's all right because then I go through my spells while he's doing that.
Oh, right. It's all that stuff.
Tweaking all my magic items to see make sure I got the right spells equipped.
Yeah, to be fair, I usually go path up ahead to try to work out which direction we've got to go so I can do that while he's doing that. And then I know which way to go next.
But that's a lot harder in the Shadow Curse lands because as soon as you're out of the torchlight, you start taking damage.
Yeah,
it turned into turn-based mode.
Yeah. So you got to do it with just moving the camera up, and then you got to sort of then go back and go, oh, now which way did I path up through here and then through? Anyway, we got to the quest marker that we were looking for and made it into Shah's Gauntlet of Shah, which is phenomenally huge, like the
it's like one block wide and 20 blocks high, which is absolutely the worst way for doing maps in this.
Well, it's challenging, the multi-height thing once again
proves very challenging, very difficult in multiplayer. It's okay in single player because everybody's with you, but in multiplayer it's very confusing.
Yeah. And then me and Josh were at the top and you guys were at the bottom.
Yeah.
Because I put the glowy stone in the box where it needed to be. So we activate the lift to get down to the next level. And you're like, oh, you need to come down here and loot.
Well, no, what happened was we found the demon. So the demon's on the heart because we backdoored the demon because we were supposed to go down the stairs to be underneath him and get ambushed by him.
Oh!
But Josh jumped across and found him on the top ready to ambush.
Me and Dino did.
Oh, you and Dino did.
I think. Oh, maybe that was me and Josh. I was
John Guinness' character that time.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Me and Josh, we found him and then had a couple of dud fights trying to work it out.
So Dino left us for about 30 minutes and missed like 1 minute of gameplay.
Because we were just
farting around for half an hour.
Get through it and get up there and fight. At least there's no Shadow Curse inside the gauntlet, so that's okay.
So you can wander around.
Yeah, that fight was good because that was tough because if he didn't kill him on his first turn, at 12%, he would
just wasted us.
Just drop. Well, he'd throw grenades out everywhere.
Yeah.
So there'd be grenades all over the place. And then all the little guys would start throwing grenades at you as well. And you would just get blown up. Like, it took us like 5 goes to finally get through that fight, work out the right
combination. Well, improved invisibility works well if you cast it on a rogue.
Oh, my God. That worked so well. So
because rogue's got good dexterity and also has sleight of hand.
Yeah.
He passes the check to remain invisible.
Yep.
So then he just backstabbed the guy, which surprised him. So he didn't get an action because we were surprised and he was still invisible. Well, so he could backstab him again and that killed him.
I think he did it like 3 times.
Yeah.
It was more than twice because I started to walk forward thinking it would be on.
Yeah, but
and I'm like, oh, geez. I was like half a brick away from getting noticed.
He went and
took him out in one go with that one turn. I'm like, that was brilliant.
It was.
That was one of those times where I feel the D&D stuff really comes together when you have these kind of like things that you sort of, you have this and you help someone else to do the thing, you know?
Yeah, because there's no way I could have done that much damage with any of my spells.
No, yeah.
But I improved invisibility on the guy that can stay invisible.
As well.
And then he does
that's a brilliant all that extra
damage.
Yep.
Yeah. So then that worked quite well.
Yep.
And then we just mopped up the little guys.
Yeah.
But that's why we got split levels. Then you guys went off one way and Dina and I went down the other way. And we found that.
Well, I was down and I went my way all the way up. And then Josh followed me to the top because I was putting the glowy orb in the brazier to see what happened with the lift.
Yep.
And then, so you were like 3 floors down and I could see you guys on the map all the way down there. Yeah. So I'm like, bye, Josh, misty step, boom, down the bottom. And just left him to path his way own way back down.
How do I get there? How do I just going up and down on the lift?
Like, it's not the lift.
Yeah. And then we found the library. So we fought the guys in the library. And again, everything's undead. So the radiant damage is really shining in this undead section.
Yep.
But of course, it's only Dino that's got radiant damage. You don't have any weapons that do radiant damage.
Guardian, though, has been perfect. Yeah, yeah. Just dropping the Guardian down, and every time someone comes into the raid, they get a chop, they get damaged by his radiant burst as well. It's quite good.
Yes.
Quite good. I think with one of those fights, I stood right next to it. And as the enemies were coming to me, you know, taking them out, that thing is really, I mean, you can't move it, so it is a bit, you need
limited.
But I think, again, it's one of those abilities that, it's not good by itself.
Yeah, but situation. It could be
someone else. I stand next to it. Now there's 2 of us there.
Yeah.
That's where it becomes beneficial. So again, that whole like, because one thing I love about D&D is like all these oddball spells that and abilities that don't seem to make a lot of sense until you give it to someone else or situation. You're like, that's how that works. And it's like, you know, or you sort of say, oh, I got this and I got this and I got this. And together, they're greater than some of their parts. Yeah.
So he put it in the doorway and they all had to run through the doorway to get to us.
That's right. That's right.
And so whacked them all as they ran through the doorway.
Boom. It was perfect. Yeah.
And
yeah,
the ones with the arrows, you stood in the doorway and taunted them. So they ran towards you and ran into it.
Bang. Problem solved. Makes it a lot easier. Yeah, yeah. So that was good. There were lots of good little fights in there that were tough. Once we got out of the stupid Shadow Curse.
Yeah, once we got into the Gauntlet of Shah, and I don't understand the Gauntlet of Shah at all. It said it's going to be testing your ability to sneak.
Well, it's all broken
it's all trashed.
Trashed up and broken. It's ginormous. Huge. Yeah. Like it's way, obviously, you know, the actual gameplay level is much smaller than the overall.
Yeah, the building itself.
The building itself is just one of those. I have to say, one of the things I do love about this game is those set pieces.
The scope. Big statue of Shah all through the middle of it.
Yeah, impressive. Right through it. And just looking down at it and going, oh, my God, it goes down for so far, you know, kind of thing. Like, So I do like it. The multi-level is good for exploration. It doesn't give you that feeling of like, oh, this is really big. But it's just a little tricky.
It's very hard to map it in your head to work out where you're actually, where you've been and where you still need to go and.
Yeah,
I find that very hard.
Yeah, there's really no indication, but the map is very.
And the Rat King, we forgot about the Rat King too. I don't know what that was all about. The rat sitting on the throne.
Yeah, I read about this, did a bit of side reading, and I think it doesn't matter what you do.
Okay.
And then that second rat comes up to you.
Yeah.
And if you can talk to that second rat, then it gives you like, it leads you to a treasure chest.
Oh, okay.
It says, here's the best of treasure. You take this and then don't leave us alone or whatever it is. Something. It was basically just treasure.
So I should have wasted my animal speak with animals potion that I didn't.
You just started not doing it when it's treasure. I don't think it's going to be anything. It's probably anything special. Yeah. So I'm like, whatever.
Yeah.
You can usually find those, though, if you just know where to go.
Yeah, you can just go find kind it of anyway.
Thing. Yeah, just go.
Yeah, several times checks. People have pointed us to treasure we've already dug up.
yeah, that's it. Yep, yep. It depends how perceptive you are. That was racking. I think that was it for that session. There was a lot of...
As you said, it all blurs into the same. I can't really... I'm remembering specific incidents, but I don't remember order they go in. I do remember not getting annoyed at all with the game for the first time in like 5 play sessions.
Oh, well.
Everything did what I expected it to do for a change.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And we went up a level, which I wasn't even waiting to go up a level, whereas normally I'm waiting to go up a level.
Yeah.
But obviously we're at the right power level now where I feel like I'm contributing to everything.
Yep.
And we're level 8. Oh, okay. Oh,
excellent. That's nice. Good. Yeah. I got another cool ability, I think, with that level up as well, and I don't remember what I picked. I ditched the locking doors for something else. I can't remember what it was.
Arcane lock.
Yeah, I didn't really see any.
And half of the spells I haven't used. Like I've got the friends cantrip, which I'm sure is useful in conversations because it makes people more favorably disposed towards you, but I've never had an option to cast the spell. So I don't know if you're supposed to cast a spell on them before you interact with them.
I suppose so.
Yeah, I guess that's what you're supposed to do. But I assumed it would be in a conversational choice.
Yeah.
Cast friends.
Yeah, or when the dice roll happens,
there's
a cast, buff. Yeah, okay.
So some of the mechanics I'm still yet to work out. So some of the spells I'm still not making the most of.
Yeah, I do have a lot of spells that I don't use. I got some shield stuff that I don't bother using and whatnot. But, you know, I like their long rest buffs that I've got now as well. They're really cool.
Yeah.
Just for the extra run and the bind weapon and stuff. I looked for another one of those, but there wasn't anything available for me to grab at this level kind of thing.
So we haven't finished the Gauntlet of Shah.
We're still working through.
Only some way through it.
Don't know how far through we are. Yeah, and then there's two more quest markers on the outside map.
Yes.
That we need to get to. And then who knows what next.
Yeah, I don't know.
From that.
So, yeah, we had the big revelation that the Mind Flayer Elder Brain is stuck into the Moonrise Towers.
Yeah.
But we've had no more real revelations in the last
play. I think, and the revelation that they were trying to use it for themselves and it got out of control.
The humans, yeah.
Yep.
Crazy humans.
And the undead Torm, the leader of the Absolute as well, like he's undead. And
we had that puzzle where you had to get the right paintings. The Dice Daughter died.
Yeah.
And he'll do anything he can to bring his daughter back from the dead.
And
we did get that.
Yeah, yeah. I still don't know how that fits in with everything else.
I guess my comment would be the game's so long.
Yeah.
It's very hard to keep everything together as to what's going on when you're playing once a week. It's quite regularly once a week.
Yeah.
But the quest, the journal log, there's so many entries in your journal. Mm-hmm. They're all over the place. That doesn't help you.
No, not really.
A quest log and a journal would have been better. So a quest log that tracks a quest and then a journal that tracks your overall progress.
Yeah.
That tracks the main story would be what I really would like.
I should go read the journal entry the quest log on Torm and just see if there's
any information. But they're all over the place. That's the problem. The quest log is all over the place. There's bits of information sprinkled all through it.
I don't think it's got like a tyranny thing where you can sort of like hit the hyperlink to get all the information about it, where it fills out about who that person is and what you've learned about them.
Yeah, I don't think it does have that.
Yeah. No. God, that was so good in Tyrion. I always felt so informed about what was going on. Everyone should deal with that option.
Yeah.
But yeah. All right. Well, that's Baldur's Gate 3.
That's Baldur's Gate 3.
At the moment.
We're still progressing on.
Ticking along.
Now level 8.
Yeah,
except for Josh, because he hasn't had any inspiration.
It's so funny that he's always that like a little bit behind us on everyone.
Yeah. The inspiration points.
Oh, so funny. So funny. Well, the other member berries thing I've been playing is Last Call BBS. This was a Humble Bundle special, but I did spot it on Steam beforehand. I just didn't actually go and buy it. So I'm like, going to come on Humble. I'm like, perfect. Yeah. So a BBS stands for Bulletin Board System, which is a pre-internet networking sort of thing.
Or social media before social media, wasn't it?
Oh, well, I mean, I guess, you know, kind of thing. It's like a forum, you know, but what would happen is you would dial in a telephone number and you would call them over the telephone line and they would have to have a certain amount of lines available to them. They might have like 15 lines coming in. So 15 people could use the BBS at one time and you could post messages. You could download things. You could play games on them, like some multi-user dungeon kind of text-based dungeon sort of stuff, you know. So very, I guess, not the internet because it required you to like the internet lets you connect to a whole bunch of different servers all the time. With BBS, you have to connect to just the one specific server, and that was it. You would disconnect and then dial a different BBS. So it's the setup for the game and the story behind the game is that this person lived through this era as a tech person, and now they've rebuilt this Zachatronics, which is a made-up brand. It's the name of the developer, computer. To replicate the experience of a BBS.
Yeah.
And the game is filled with little journal entries talking about their thoughts about the game at the time, about what the scene was doing at the time. You know, they talk about going to Singapore and getting one of the game's Chip Wizard cracked from a store. They went to the store, they had a big leaflet binder, you picked the software, the guy comes out from the back, burns a DVD, and then there you go. There's this $20,000 piece of software for you for $10 kind of thing, you know, which probably doesn't, I don't think those things kind of exist anymore because the internet.
And they used to, though.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
100% remember doing stuff like that.
I came home from Malaysia the first time with a huge 50 DVD spindle of a bunch of games. Yeah. I didn't think I played any of them, but the experience about going and going on that and that and that, all these games that you couldn't get a hold of back then because Steam wasn't a thing or anything, you know, it was really cool. So that's when I say member berries. It's if you've lived through that period, there's a lot of stories. I guess it's all made up stuff, but the stories all ring
true.
And so when you go into the options of the game, it's got like the memory and stuff. When you're loading the thing, it's got the sound of the hard drive going, you know. So you start off the game by ringing up, calling into the BBS, and then you download one of the games, and then it locks you out for downloads for 15 minutes, so you got to disconnect and call back later. But then it gives you a chance to play that particular
game
for the game. There's not much else to the BBS side of it except for that, which is a little disappointing. Because one of the things I have added back in are the old school Wares scenes intro videos. And if you ever played any crack games from like the 90s, early 2000s, you know, Razer 911 or whatever would create a little graphic that would play before the game starts with a bunch of sound and all that kind of stuff. So they've got those in some of the games because some of them have been cracked and stuff, you know. And some of those have numbers, like call our BBS. I was like, oh, I wrote the number down. And then you can't enter in any new, like there's no way to dial a custom number. There was no secret there or anything. There's one BBS. You can, which is cool, create your own BBSs using JavaScript. So I guess someone out there might have created their own BBSs and you can load them in and then go and interact with them in a similar way, which is kind of fun. But anyway, the main core of the game is the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 mini games that they've got in there. All of them, I don't know if all of them, but a lot of them seem to be based off real games. So they've sort of taken an old game. So one of the ones they've got is Dungeons and Diagrams. I definitely checked that one out. There is an older version of it. They've just remade it for that one. That's a really cool one where you have to, it's a tile-based logic game. So you sort of get, sort of like Sudoku, you say, oh, there's 6 bricks in this row and there's 5 bricks in this column. And you've got to like pick up the bricks and then build the dungeon. You know, there are rules. Monsters are always at the end of dungeons. The chest always has 6 bricks around it. There can only be 1 brick wide. There's never more than 4 bricks together. Kind of like Sudoku meets Minesweeper, you know, kind of logic game. Stuff. It's pretty fun. I couldn't get my head around it to understand it, but it was interesting to play. All of these games are very interesting to play, which I think is
That's what they really needed to rely on back in the day, because the graphics and the sound were nothing, so they had to rely on excellent gameplay to engage you.
And weird gameplay and stuff that you hadn't sort of like, it's sort of more niche. There's a lot, they bang all about that in the text of things. Like there's one in there called X comma BPGH The Forbidden Path. Right, which is very maybe like Cthulhu kind of ish sort of like thing. It's all about using enter a cursed world and create bizarre flesh sculptures in exchange for eternal life. So it uses like a genetic algorithm to sort of like, you set up a, like, it's really, it's even hard. The UI is impossible to the work whole out, thing to work out, and you sort of like build something that sort of like grows the flesh in a certain way to match the pattern on the other side, and you can grow left, you can grow right, you can transform it into flesh and then grow hair on it, you know, and stuff like that. It's really weird. It's really weird, But interesting. There's Speed Force Hobby Studio where you take those like Gundam style things. You cut out all the plastic and then you put them together, and then you can use tape and paint to fully paint them out and make them look really cool. There's no wind condition. It's just, you're just this.
Making models.
Yep, that's all you're doing. Yep. There's a couple of solitaire games, Sawayama Solitaire and Kabudufa Solitaire. I probably butchered both those names. Just different variations on the solitaire trick, which was interesting. Hack and Match, which is a tile matching mini game. You sort of like the tiles fall from the sun, and you got to like join them to threes, and then if they collapse, they do more points and you beat the boss, do that kind of stuff. The two that really got me, though, I mentioned before, was Chip Wizard Professional, which is literally building like trends. The first thing you build is a transistor.
Yep.
You got to use, you have a little grid, you got to use metal, N-type silicon and P-type silicon and capacitors to build things, to build chips, build transistors, OR gates, logic gates, the whole bits. I built one chip by myself and I am so proud of that achievement. The rest of them, though, I just followed the guide. I just wanted to see, like, what would happen, because they are, for just having four components, it's what I love about it. It's the fundamental building blocks of what computers are.
Yeah.
An OR gate, an AND gate, an XOR gate, you know, just even the humble transistor are just, like, critical things to computing. So seeing how they're kind of built and getting to, like, see it kind of operate, and you got to, like, match the inputs and outputs and all that kind of stuff. I don't know if fun's the right word. Very interesting.
Very engaging.
Very, I wish I had more patience to sit and actually like learn it, but I didn't really.
Yeah.
And it wasn't,
you wasn't know, fun enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Really high. Like, it's challenging. I felt it was very challenging to kind of understand what I was looking for. It's very. What's that, sorry?
For people who like Mensa math puzzles.
Maybe, or if you have like a bit more of engineering or electrical engineering thing, you might, you know, enjoy it more and stuff like that. I thought it was just fascinating from the lesson. That's why the story goes along with it as well. It was like he wanted to play around with it. He never was going to build chips, but he wanted to understand what went into it. That's why he wanted the software to have a play with it.
Yeah.
The last one that really got me, though, was 20th Century Food Court. Design factories to produce food just like they did over 700 years ago in 20th century. Keep your costs low and your machines running fast is the setup for it. And
satisfactory.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. And very, very, very much no.
Okay.
You know, because so the premise of the story is fun. So it's the 30th century and this is a throwback theme park that they've built. Yeah. One of the attractions is 20th century food, you know? And so after everything you do for the every time you beat one, you get the reviews of these people and the things that they say is so funny. Like one of the ones, you've got to make coffee and cigarettes for a French experience and they're eating the cigarettes, you know, cause they don't know. And then there's a letter from the company saying we've had to close that down. Cause it turns out they were burning the cigarettes. Yeah. We're not really sure about that, but until we're sure, we're going to close that particular section of the ride down and all these like very humorous kind of reviews and stuff. But the gameplay itself is two panels. On the right are your machines and belts. On the left is your logic panel. The belts and stuff are pretty straightforward, you know, machines output stuff and they put them on a belt and you've got to stack them together or drop liquids into them or turn them around, cut them, roll them, whatever it is for that particular meal. There's like pizza and deep fried stuff and burgers and chips, and sushi is the last one, which is the most complicated one to build out. And so you have all that on one side. On the other side, you have how you build the logic, and it's very much patch. It's all like patch cables, like old school. You take a signal for cable, you literally run a cable into the multi-mixer to then have it spread out across four outputs. You've got counters, timers, you have splitters and routers and stuff for the belt work. So like a sorter has like one input and then three outputs, and you take get a block to fit into your patch cable box, because it's sort of the left-hand side where you have all the stuff are all like slot in boxes that you would slot in mm-hmm. to a machine. So there's three rows you have and you only have a limited amount of space. So you can't build it out forever, yep. but you've got to slot these things into, you know, some of them are two wide, some of them are single wide, you know, and then, you know, the fryer, if you have a fryer to fry stuff, it has a control box where it will yeah. sense, it'll, if it senses something, it'll send a signal out and then you got to press an eject button to make it eject. So you got to build, and this is where it's very much not like satisfactory, because Satisfactory is very much a logistics game, mm-hmm. more so than this kind of automation game where you have to, like, you know, use a counter. And this took me so long to get my head around, right? But the counter, I don't think I worked it out until I went and looked at a solution and then went, that's how you use this thing. I didn't even know. But the counter has an internal counter that starts at zero. And then you have two, I don't know what you call them, but like two inputs. And then you have a zero output. So when the counter is equals zero, it will send a signal down through the zero output. The two in the middle, every time you send a signal, it will do whatever you set on the counter. So if you want to say countdown for 3 seconds for, like, say, for a timer for frying some food, mm-hmm. you might set the sensor to the top one, set it to -1. And then the bottom one you set to like 3. And you have it so that when the machine starts and it sends a start signal out, it sets the counter to 3. And then every time it senses something, it will decrement that by 1. And when it hits yeah. 0, it will then hit the release button and send that out. And so that's the sort of, that's like one of the more basic blocks that you have to sort of build yourself. You know, the timing ones, you have 4 outputs and you can click all the little boxes because everything's based on like a 1 second tick. Set all the boxes up and make the little pattern. And then as the timer goes down, it will like shoot out signals yeah. off those 4 outputs. And using those simple tools, you build these super complicated things. And just when you start seeing all these huge amounts of cables and signals running here and then it goes here and it pops strings up and it uses all these little really clever logic tricks in the belt work, you know, because it does tie into the belt work and making sure all the things are in the right spaces at the right time. People are so clever. Some of the solutions, I beat a lot of them by myself. Some of them I needed some help. And then I went back and looked at their solution and went, wow, they're using half the machines, half the belt work. How do they manage to do this kind of thing? And what it does is every time you beat it, it gives you a cost score. So using less machinery is better.
Less, yep.
And then also time, how long it takes you to build all the machines and stuff like that. And a couple of them managed to get like the timings down to like whatever the fastest possible time is. And other times it was so far.
Not even close.
Oh, this is the completely wrong approach to doing it, but kind of thing. Yeah, but it's working and that's fine. Yeah. And what's nice about it too is you can save that at loadout and then start a new game and then build a second version of it and refine it and keep your old one, which is really nice. So you can sort of like, but yeah, I think that one caught me because one, it's an automation game, which is fun, but I've never done automation like that before where I need to set up a timer, you know, and build my own counters, you know, and if you got like the bigger counter, the 2-block one, you can have it signal on a positive number and 0, which gives you, and then you've got 4 counters you can possibly have, you know, and there's a little scanner box that will scan what the order is and keep sending a signal out about these particular orders need to be done so you can control whether things turn on or turn off or does do this. Because the orders, the idea of the machine is that people have a fixed amount of orders. Like you might have 10 orders you need to fulfill and you need to be able to cover every single scenario. And so when you hit the play button, to win the game, you have to complete every single order perfectly. And then that counts as a win condition. You can't let the orders go too soon. You can't miss frying or pick the wrong ingredient or anything like that. And some of the burgers are like, you know, plain burger, burger with cheese, double burger with cheese, triple burger and cheese. Then single burger with tomato and pickle. Single burger with cheese, tomato and pickle, you know, and then all the like things like 15 combinations to and you got to build every single one of them. And then when you see the machine and you press the button and it goes through and does it all and you're like, wow, it made all of that stuff with just this little bit of like, this is real, like hardcore, I feel industrial manufacturing systems back in the day. This is how they would have made them. Like they wouldn't have computers. So you can't like have a PC deciding everything. You have to use these signals that are coming off your belts to drive it and know what's there to sort of enable or disable it. Oh, it was really interesting. Just never played anything like it before. and so much fun working with patch cables, like to build out logic using patch cables. We really like old school, you know, Jana was doing a lot of reading about the ENIAC 6, the people who built like the first subroutines in computers, a group of women that they put in charge. These men built this machine, didn't know how to code it, didn't know the math that goes behind it, but they'd all been doing the math on these calculation tables for like how to fire artillery. And so they got their hands on the computers, and that's how they would program the computer, was moving these patch cables around to take data from this register and put it in this one over here and do all that stuff. It was like, oh, this is member buried old school kind of stuff. Anyway, if any of those sound interesting, it is, like, it's probably a cheap game to buy on Steam. It's definitely worthwhile. It was super fun to go through those. And even if you just, like I did, go on Steam and look up the solutions, the Chip Wizard one is so interesting in the history of computing on how those things actually work, that they do all that, and they do it all now by using light to burn sand.
Yeah.
You know?
It's phenomenal,
like,
isn't it?
It's just crazy, you know? Yeah. It's absolutely crazy. Yeah, yeah. Anyway, that's Last Call BBS. That was a win. And I'm on to another indie game called Tin Can, where you have to survive inside of a failing space capsule.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, I died a lot last night. A lot. I'll have more update when I've had a chance to get a bit more through it, but that was also something that I haven't played before, which is good. Very much like Last Call BBS.
Yeah.
I am fascinated though, Tony, about what the hell Unicorn Overload is, because
Overlord.
Oh, I wrote that wrong. Overlord, Unicorn. Yeah. I'm fascinated either way. I'm happy either way. Like, I want to know why we're being overlorded by the unicorns.
Yeah. Well, you're not. No. It's interesting.
Okay.
So it's like a Japanese RPG.
Okay.
There's a style. It's been touted as having a specific style, which I had never heard the word before, but so I can't tell you what it is. But
okay.
It's a style that is the one that I'm used to, that I play a lot. The Nintendo games use this style a lot. So you're the son of the dynasty that's been fallen, and it's now 20 years later. So you're the unicorn, as far as I can tell. I've only played the demo. The game only came out on March the 8th.
Okay.
So you've got a unicorn ring. The unicorn, the family emblem of your family is a unicorn. So I'm pretty sure that's where the unicorn comes from.
And
the general of your army betrayed your family and then became the overlord of the whole region and corrupted everybody and took over everywhere. So I think that's where the overlord comes from, but I'm not sure. You probably find out as you play the game further, but probably. It's really interesting.
Yep.
It's the only game that I've ever played like it before. I mean, it plays like every other turn-based game that you can think of, but the combat, Final Fantasy 12 or 11, no, Final Fantasy 11, where you've got artificial intelligence and you have these things that you can do. So you don't control your characters. You set up their combat behavior beforehand.
Oh.
And then it plays out your combat orders. So you tell the healer, heal the character with the lowest hit points.
Yep.
So you don't have to worry about magic points. You don't have to worry about stuff like that. You have to worry about hit points. But every character gets a certain number of action points and a certain number of passive points.
Yeah.
And the combat will play out until everybody's spent all of their action points or one side is completely defeated. And so some of the abilities you get will add an action point onto the character that you cast it on. So you have a fighter that's only got one action point and he attacks, and then that's him done. But then the cleric casts action heal, and it gives him an action point back, then he gets another attack.
Yep.
And then there's all these different character classes. All the character classes act differently.
I suppose it's all turn-based kind of like
thing, or is it just plays out. So there's an overworld map where you've got your little units on the overworld map and you give them orders. And in real time, they move around the map following the orders that you've given them.
Right.
But the enemy's doing the same thing, and the enemy will come and intercept you.
Yep. Okay.
So you go here and pick up this bit of treasure, but then the enemy comes up to intercept you and get the bit of treasure first. Go here and capture this castle, but then the enemy comes out from the castle to attack you. So it's really interesting. So there's valor points that you accrue as you go through, and you can do stuff with valor points. You can bring more units onto the field. You can use the unit's special abilities by spending valor points. As you the whole town, the whole area has been ruined by the overlord.
Yeah.
So people are happy for you to come. You're the rebellion army, and people are very happy to see you.
Yep.
And they then ask you to rebuild their towns.
Yep.
So out of the combat section, there's a whole overland section where you got to go and collect resources and take them to the towns and build the towns. And it feels very Japanese RPG.
Yeah.
You level up, you get equipment, you unlock relationships between your characters. It's Very interesting.
It sounds a little, I'm trying to think of anything that it's sort of like, but I mean, I'm thinking Hammerting had as a similar kind of thing where you just tell you guys, hey, go do this, go attack here, go do that. And they decide for themselves. You just gear them up and give them instructions and then you just...
They do it themselves.
Do it themselves. You know, same with like building the deep underground. You say, hey, mine this out, but they decide what the priority is and how to go about mining that out. And if you give them dumb orders, they're going to trap themselves and stuff like that kind of thing. Sort of reminds me of that, but obviously well, they're very different.
Tweaking. You're tweaking your orders. So you got to tweak your party composition. So each character has a party block of six squares. So you can have six members. You don't start off with six unlocked. You start off with two unlocked. So you have two members in each party.
Yep.
And... then you can unlock to get three, unlock to get four, and unlock more party blocks, to get all your characters on board.
Yeah.
But then it's tweaking which character goes with which character. And so you're like, so your main character heals when he attacks. So I had him set with someone that would then heal him on their turn. So he could just keep fighting.
Forever.
Because he just would never run out of hit points.
Yep.
But I found out that wasn't working because he couldn't, he didn't get enough attacks. He only had one action. He couldn't kill the enemy units. So he'd run out of stamina. So you got stamina as well, which determines how many fights you can fight before you're naked.
Yeah, right.
So that didn't work. So even though he never took any damage, or he'd always be healed from the damage he took, he couldn't kill stuff quickly enough. So that actually didn't work.
That's pretty fun.
So there's all these interactions between the characters you put together and then actually where they are on your battle map is important because there's characters with lances that will attack in a straight line. So they'll attack both characters that are lined up together and then there's other characters that will attack with a sweep. They'll attack all three standing next to each other. So then you've got to work out what enemy you're facing and how they attack and which is the best party combination to deal with that. It's really interesting.
Yeah, right. At the end of the day, you sort of pick what you want and then you say, go forth, and then it just runs through the calculation to
work out who works. There's a little area where if your party, different parties are in the same area, you can swap who's attacking.
Yeah.
So you can have two quite differently composed armies, but you just keep them near each other and then you can swap to whichever one's better suited to the fight.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. It's really engaging. So I finished the demo the other day.
Yeah.
Just as the story starts getting interesting, the demo says, bad luck, man, you got to buy the full game. But yeah, if you like... that sort of Japanese RPG, it's very engaging. It looks fantastic. It's got all the tropes in it.
Yep.
You get to choose what you do with the villains. So every level, so every one of your character levels matches a level on the map, and each level has a villain. And basically to beat that area of the map, you've got to beat that villain. And then you get a choice at the end. What do you do with the villain? Do you send him to jail or do you execute him? Do you set him free or do you ask him to join your rebellion? All these choices come up. So in the demo, obviously, you don't necessarily get to find out the outcome of the choices that you're making, but I'm sure the choices that you make have some outcome further on down in the game.
Cool.
Yeah, that's very interesting.
I did a quick search and you mentioned style earlier, Vanillaware style.
Now, Vanillaware is the producer.
Right.
It starts with an S.
Right, okay.
The style of game that it is, like Sakura style or something like that.
Right. Yeah, nothing
which I'd never heard of before, But Vanillaware is it's a producer, I think, of the game.
Right. It seems to be that, like, they've developed their own particular look and feel because people definitely are referring to it as that sort of animation and style as well, which is interesting. Yeah, okay. Yeah. All right. Is that that's a PlayStation exclusive?
Or no, it's on everything. It's on Nintendo Switch. It's a console exclusive. It's on Nintendo Switch, PlayStation and Xbox. So the demo's on every one of their stores. The demo's not just a demo. It's actually the first five levels of the game. So you actually get a very good idea of what the game's actually like and whether you like it or not.
Right.
So I've made a promise to myself to play through more of my games before I buy new games this year. So I'm just hoping it either goes onto Xbox
Game Pass or something like that.
And I'll play it, or wait for it to get really cheap and get on PlayStation.
Yeah.
But it's good. Very engaging. Entertaining.
Interesting. I just, as a digression on that whole console thing, I saw an article yesterday from Phil Schiller, an interview with Phil Schiller, the old Xbox head who's now working for EA, saying that he thinks Microsoft's probably having a long, hard think about whether they're going to put out another Xbox or not.
Right.
I'll be like, oh, that's actually a really good point. I've been kind of like thinking that like with online streaming and stuff like that being more of an option, with the way they've now got Activision Blizzard and the sort of games that they need to put out, Microsoft's not a hardware company.
No.
You know? So it's like,
basically just a computer that they're building.
Basically what the
consoles used to be a very different beast from a PC.
Yeah,
they used to play very different types of games. And you put cartridges in and you'd instantly have access to the game.
Yes.
There's none of this loading crap that you had with PC games. Yeah. But now it's all console games all load. It's all effectively the same thing.
You know? So it's really like, you just made a point in there about single use devices. How we used to have a lot of single use devices.
Yeah.
You know, obviously Discmans and CD players. Now they're all just your phone and using whatever app it is you're going to use music, right? Yeah. It's a part of a multi-purpose device. And he's saying kids today, their portal is a tablet and phone. Yeah. If they can get streaming on a portable and phone, where does that leave the console market?
Yeah.
You know, for those people, the people who are mostly make up that console market. And the PC is always going to be PC. It's there for a different enthusiast market. That's different. But like when you look at, well, is there space for the Switch, Nintendo stuff is always
sort of arguably different.
Side. Yeah. But a lot of exclusivity, really. Yeah. The only thing that really makes it any different. But then is there enough market left? And does it make sense for Microsoft? Like all their games are now on PC.
It never made sense for Microsoft. I don't know why they entered the market. It never made sense for them.
Yeah.
Interesting. The Xbox has always been the poor child to the PlayStation.
Yeah, I think the Xbox 360 made a pretty good run against the PS3.
Yeah.
But that was their high watermark.
But that's because also Sony stripped out the PS3 completely. It was going to be your entertainment console. This was their original concept. So I've never owned a Blu-ray player or a DVD player.
No,
I've always used my console.
Yeah.
And Sony realized that with the PlayStation 3. So they were going to put in amplifier for your sound system, upscaling DVD player. They're going to put all of your entertainment console into their device.
Yeah.
And that's what they did originally with the PlayStation 3, which is why it's such a big chunky thing.
Yeah.
But then Microsoft went the other way and said, we're just doing a gaming console. And so then Sony stripped everything back out of the PlayStation 3.
Yeah. There was a big price difference back then as well.
I think, well, there wasn't. See, this was excellent marketing. Sony absolutely dropped the ball on their marketing.
Oh my God, how did I forget all these internet arguments about this?
I don't know why Sony dropped the ball so badly on it. All they needed to do
was go
side by side. This is what you get with the PlayStation. You get the player built in. You get the rechargeable battery with your controller, which is included. You get the cable for your rechargeable battery, which is side by side. Xbox, you just buy the console. You want the hard drive? You pay extra for that. Yeah. You want the DVD player? You pay extra for that. You want the controller? You pay extra for that. You want the rechargeable battery in the controller? You pay extra for that. Yeah. You want the cable? You pay extra for that. And when you did that, the PlayStation was $10 cheaper.
Yes.
It was actually $10 cheaper, but you didn't have the option of not getting all that crap
thing, and that's all that matters in the end, isn't it? Mum and dad go to the store, they look at the PlayStation, the Xbox, and go, this one is half the price, I'm buying this one. The kids can have this
and
one.
And they can go, I can't do this. All right, I'll go buy the add-on.
Over years, you know.
Yeah. I don't know how Sony dropped the ball on that marketing.
Sony's got
Well, they didn't think problems. Microsoft were going to be a... Because Xbox compared to the PlayStation was nothing.
Oh, yeah.
But the Xbox 360 came out before the PlayStation 3. Microsoft gambled on HD DVD rather than Blu-ray.
If they had picked Blu-ray,
it
may have turned out even worse for Sony. Yeah. But that was probably one thing that
that was in Sony's favor.
You know, But so I wonder in the future, apparently Phil Schiller as well was in the room when Sony decided, not Sony.
Microsoft.
No. Sega,
decided
to drop the Dreamcast after it flopped. Like, he was in the room when those decisions were being made. And then he went to Microsoft, did the Xbox, and now he's like, you think this is a guy who probably knows what's going on. If he's saying they're having and I think that's true. Online streaming, you know, you're going to put your games on everything everywhere. Like, why not just do that and not have to have this huge lost leader of the console? So I'm seriously wondering if you have that. And I wonder where that leaves the PlayStation going forwards, you know, because there's no PS6 on the horizon as far as I'm aware. There's been no, because PS5 has been out for
not been out for long enough yet.
There's usually they're starting in some rumors though.
It's 3 years. It's not been 3 years yet.
Not 3 years?
No.
Okay. Well, so I guess I had a lot of trouble getting them out the door.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I'm saying it's not been 3 years yet, but it may be because including the pandemic, it probably has been released for 3 years.
Yeah.
But there was 18 months where no one could get it.
Go get it or anything, yeah. Yeah, whether we just have just a console and now Sony's bringing out, they're bringing Ghosts of Tsushima out Steam, which is one of the ones on my list of exclusives that I wanted to play. So I'm looking forward to checking that out when it, well, when it comes a bit cheaper, it's $95 or whatever at the moment, you know, whatever. Yeah. But yeah, that's really cool. So I'm getting like more stuff on the PC as well. I wonder if it's going to be more, less market for the consoles going forwards. Just Nintendo.
I think it's the kids that don't have a computer are still what the console's aimed at.
Yeah, I think there's also a whole range of Call of Duty FIFA players that just play Call of Duty and just play FIFA that want just that simple box.
And the armed forces guys who can't have a PC with them, but they can have a console and with them.
Are those people want to buy a console or do they just want to pay $20 or whatever a month to stream it to their TV and not have to deal with the console? Yeah. If they can. Like there's a big if. Online streaming has a big problem.
That they're all these online-only games that all the armed forces guys were complaining about that they couldn't play.
Yeah.
The game didn't need to be online only. They were just forcing online only on it and they couldn't play it because they were in an area where they couldn't get internet.
Changing anytime soon. No. Yeah. So like where does that leave a console, even a single console manufacturer? You know, Nintendo doesn't have anything like that. Arguably, the Switch is a portable console, not a home console sort of thing. So it is a little bit different. I wonder if we're not going to have any follow-up Xbox and whether the PS6 ends up being the last PlayStation before it all just goes to the PlayStation app on your phone that you just stream all your stuff instead. Yeah. Why would I want to buy a console and have it go out? I just want to buy
FIFA. Sony TVs are PlayStations.
Yeah, right.
As far as I'm aware, the Sony TVs are now PlayStations.
Right.
You can stream all your PlayStation games to your Sony smart TV.
You still need a PlayStation controller to do that kind of thing. So you take that box, put it online and get a controller, you pair the controller with the TV.
Yeah.
That segment of market who, like, if you take out those people and say they're going to do streaming, the people that are left probably aren't that many people left. And that enthusiast market can just probably pivot to being on PC and there's no more consoles. Everybody wins. Just tablets and phones and smart TVs and PCs and that's kind of it. You know, with Nintendo probably still hanging on.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to give up their exclusivity on their stuff.
They realize that they're only keeping them going.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and they started it all with the Game & Watch anyway.
Yeah, you know, back in those days. Yeah. The fact they're still going is pretty crazy.
Had a Game & Watch.
Really interesting. Nintendo just got Yuzu cut down to size as well recently, one of the emulators for the Switch. They took him to court.
Okay.
Yuzu was being real dumb. They apparently they had like pre-release games on their Discord server going around and things like that. It's like, you guys flew way, way, way too close to the sun.
Yeah.
You know, the settlement's for $2.4 million, which is an insane amount of money for any sort of emulation project to even contemplate having around is just crazy. But yeah, anyway, digression into the console space. But yeah, I think I'd be interested to see what comes out. I think the single-use product thing is also really interesting. I can't think of too many single-use devices that are still around today that people use.
Oh, entertainment devices. There's your oven and your microwave and your dishwasher and your washing machine.
I think kitchen gadgetry, yes, for sure, has always been an explosion. Now you've got air fryers, which are arguably mini ovens, but a slightly different kind of thing. Kitchen gadgetry is rife for that kind of stuff, for sure. I know washer-dryer hasn't really changed in 30 years, there's not really a lot of things there. But yeah, certainly on the personal entertainment front, you know, kind of thing. We just all use phones and tablets. We
walk around with computers in our pocket.
Yeah, as they've got more powerful. So another 10 years, how much more powerful are your phones? And where does that leave a single-use console device when you're watching everything on streaming services anyway, which you can do on your smart TV or whatnot kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
I do think, though, like the Roku boxes and stuff are still really popular as like, having a smart TV is kind of proven to be a bit of a garbage thing because as TVs, the smart software often doesn't get updated after a certain period of time because they want you to go buy a new TV because your TV is still perfectly good and you're not going to buy one for 10 years, but if the software is out of date.
Yeah.
So I think having a dedicated entertainment box for the lounge room might be something that hangs around for a long time, but is that a PlayStation or
not? We found that on my parents' Panasonic TV.
Oh, yeah. Same with my parents. Get
7 now or 10 plus because they didn't make it for Panasonic.
Yep.
The only thing they could say, so they started off with that stuff.
Yeah,
but then eventually they ended up with only iView.
Because no one wants to support it.
You could get it.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. So it's like, that's a dead end as far as I'm concerned. I don't think smart TVs are ever going to get over that software technology debt kind of issue. So you really need something dedicated, someone who's going to like create a platform that's going to be supported for a long time, like a Roku or a Fire Stick or a PlayStation 6, maybe. A PlayStation, I don't know, can you get like Netflix and 7 and stuff on your PlayStation? Have they?
It's all there.
It's all there?
Yeah.
Yeah. I could maybe see that's maybe where they're spacing it. Maybe it comes back to that old PS3 thing.
Yeah, where
it this is your entertainment center. You can do Netflix. Yeah. You can do all that stuff on here. Always have the apps work. That becomes a new cell. And just gaming is one more function of the device kind of thing. Might be where that where it goes. Oh, it's really interesting. I'm curious to see. We'll see how it shakes out. Last thing before we wrap up, Lamplighters League, Tony.
Yes. So I'm at the end of the game now.
Oh, you're beating it?
No, I haven't beaten it. But so they've made a lot of changes with the patches, which are for the better. So a lot of the updates that have happened, of course, I'm 3/4 of the way through the game and the patches are applying to my current game, but not retroactively. So now when you beat the, so the three bad guys are called the Scions.
Yeah.
They appear in missions and when you beat them, the threat level reduces. But now also when you beat them, you get a really cool bit of a kit, which you didn't used to get.
Yeah.
So that's a big improvement. Now every week on the world map, an event happens and you've got to interact with on the world map. That didn't used to happen. That's now really cool. You get different outcomes for that.
Okay.
But there's a couple of things that are odd design choices. So you get supplies and a supplier who will give you stuff. But after about mission 5, you stop using him. So I've got like 2,500 supplies because I don't need to buy armor. All my characters have armor on. I don't need to buy the gadgets because I've got them all. So I've got all these supplies that I can't do anything with. So there's a whole resource that they put into the game that's actually not useful after about week 5. That's
as is tradition.
Yeah, and then there's this. Then there's the undrawn hand is your superpower stuff. Yeah. And there's a resource to go with them, and I've got nowhere near enough of the resource of that to upgrade those cards. So I'd quite happily. And you, the only way you can get that is by getting more cards and trashing them to get more of that resource. But you can only get a maximum of 4 cards per mission. And in order to get a card from level 4 to level 5, which is the highest level, it costs 1,000 ink, which is the resource for the cards. And when you trash an entire hand of 4 cards, you get about 60 ink. So, it's not that. That's crazy. The other decision that they've made, which is really odd, is there's 10 characters in the game and you unlock 6 quite quickly. But now I'm in week 35 and it's the end of the world. Like the bad guys, I'm having to do... I'm so late into the game. The doomsday clocks on 2 of the Scions are at midnight.
Oh, yeah.
So I get to do one mission, then I have to do a save the world mission.
Oh, yeah.
Then I can do another mission, then I have to do another save the world mission. Okay. So I'm in this quite boring, where every second mission is achieving nothing. But now I'm starting to unlock the last 4 characters.
Wow.
But it's so late in the game that I'm never going to use them, but there's an achievement for unlocking all the characters, so I'm going for it to get the achievement. But there's a really odd choice. It would have been much better if you got all the characters. So you don't. You really only need the 3 characters you start with. You really only need those 3 characters because they get wounded and they can't run missions, but you get this resource that you can heal them immediately of their wounds.
Oh.
And I've got 36 of that resource.
Okay.
So. And you only need 1 to heal the agents of their wounds. So again, that's another resource that you get so much more of than you need.
It's so weird. These games, like the games that you play, Tony, more like these sort of turn-based games, these internal currency kind of having, whether it's a time resource or whatever, like keeping that balance seems to be very really challenging. Yeah. Either you got too much or just not enough. And
so it would have been better if you'd unlocked all 10 of the agents you can get and then there were more specific missions specifically tailored to specific agents.
Yeah.
Because the game is challenging. You need to know how your agent works to use them effectively in the mission. So when you get a new agent, you've got no idea how to use that agent. So at the start of the game, the enemies aren't that... They're not that lethal. So you can make mistakes and you don't die. Now, at the point I'm at, everything's lethal. So I can't learn how to use a new agent
because
they just die. So they're a liability to take on the mission with me. That's a really odd game choice that they've kept these other characters
so far away.
Yeah.
Like, why would you put them right at the end of the game?
I don't know what they were thinking.
It's not the first game that's done that to us as well. Like,
I think they want you to play it again. Because you get to choose, you always get a choice of 2 which character you unlock.
Right.
So the second playthrough, you choose the character that you didn't choose the first time and you unlock all the other characters.
Yeah.
But then why give an achievement for unlocking all the characters in one single playthrough? It's really odd. So, because obviously people like me are going to try and get all the achievements on their first playthrough, as many as they can on their first playthrough.
Yeah.
So they don't, yeah.
Yeah. And see, like I did start playing Chaos Gate.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So I played a few, I don't know how much to say about it yet because I'm really early on in it, but I noticed immediately when you talk about this sort of thing with the seeds, it pops 3 seeds on the map, but you can only get to 2 seeds at any time kind of thing. And it's just like, it feels really, I don't know, dead. You don't get any feedback to know if that's good or bad. Is that a good thing? Is it expected of me that I'm only going to reach 2, or is it like, is
no, you get no feedback. That's very true.
Yeah. And like you're saying with your game, like you're getting all these resources and some of them are rare, some of them are not, but you're not sure which ones are rare and which ones are not, you know, until like you've almost finished the game and you're like, oh, now I know how to play the game now that I've played it. Yeah. It's like, oh, that's not.
Well, the seeds don't work like that in Chaos Gate. You learn very quickly that.
Yeah. There's probably.
Things start going wrong across the whole map and there's no possible way you can get from one side to the other, they're expecting you to not get to all of them.
And I think I knew that. From when you played it, that was to be expected. Yeah. But still, I was like, oh, there's no
immediate feedback. You're never going to be able to get to all of these things. So choose wisely.
Choose wisely. You know, you may get to 2 if you choose wisely. And some of that's like, I was just at that system and now I'm down here.
Yes.
And no, I should have stayed there. Again. Yeah.
Throws all these obstacles in your way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I'm loving the 1930s style. They've really leaned in. They've nailed the style, the artwork, the characterization of the characters. It feels very film noir movie. It's really good.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And my characters that are fully powered up feel really powerful. So that's really good.
Yeah.
They've really given you that feeling of power.
Good. But, yeah,
there's just some strange design choices. Definitely. If you like turn-based games and you like film noir stuff, it's 100% recommended.
Yeah.
It's really entertaining and engaging. Yeah.
Oh, well, that's the main thing, you know, at the end of the day, you know. Yeah.
I haven't finished it yet because I want to get these achievements and then I'll finish it. So I've got a save game. If everything goes horribly, horribly wrong, I've got a save game near the end of the game where I've stopped messing about.
Oh, yep.
And I can go back to that save to actually finish the game if I get into a situation
where you can't unlock all the characters. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So I don't think you can get a game over because every time, so you got to get to the tower and stop the Bright Storm.
Okay.
And they're all trying to get to the tower and activate the Bright Storm.
Simple enough.
So I don't think you can actually fail because every time they get to the tower, you get an opportunity to stop them.
Yep.
So I don't think you can actually lose the game that way.
Yeah.
I think you'll always get that opportunity to stop them. And if you just fail that mission, it's game over.
Game over.
But it's very hard to fail that mission.
Yep. Interesting. Landplanners League. Yeah, well, looking forward to see how it finishes up, if you can actually.
I'll finish it by next episode, I reckon.
Upload, if you can unlock all the characters or not, that's what I'm curious to see.
Yeah, that's true.
If that'll work or not, if that's a doable thing, or it's just a real dick achievement to make it hard.
Keep playing.
I was going to try to get all of Last Call BBS's achievements until it's like, you need to perfect all the games.
Oh, right.
Kind of thing. So a few of them I've beaten, kind of thing. But like that hack and slash one with all the blocks, you got to beat on expert. I'm like, nah.
No, I'm not doing it.
And then the rest of them are just like copying everyone's diagrams. And I'm like, that doesn't sound like anything. Yeah. I'm not coming. No. Nah, never mind. I just find the hidden achievement and do the games that I really like. I've beaten all those. Yeah. Achievement hunting's real.
Oh, I hate it. I really do. But I can't stop doing it.
God, stop me. Yeah. All right. So next time, Tin Can, maybe some Chaos Gate.
Yeah.
Cool. Lamplighters League wrap up.
Yep.
More Baldur's Gate 3.
More Baldur's Gate 3.
So many things. Tin Can,
it sounds interesting. I'm intrigued to hear more.
Yeah. I wonder how many more times I'm going to
die of lack of oxygen.
Yeah. I mean, like, it starts you off.
Of space.
Like, you got to survive for 6 minutes. You know, what I realize is I'm actually like I'm still on the training wheels kind of thing, like scenarios where they're like, you need to survive 6 minutes and I'm repairing the main computer and that's like completely pointless because you just need to like repair the oxygen generators. Yeah. All you have to do to survive 6 minutes kind of thing.
Yeah.
I look at some of the records and people have survived for like 3 hours.
Okay.
And that's like that's like the number one record kind of thing. Yeah. So you like, certainly, not gonna live for a very long time, I guess is kind of the idea, I think in the story I was like, whatever you do, don't use this escape pod to escape the system because it is so broken kind of thing. Like they sort of make this joke about it. And then of course, the game starts and, oh, look, hey, I need to use the escape pod that's broken. Luckily I've been helping them fix it. I know how to do it now. Yeah, cool. All right. So until then, thank you, Tony.
Thank you, Luke.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite podcast on the internet.